Hey everyone, this is Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort, and without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast got started on the drum kit at age 5, but plot twist, his first instrument for school band was French horn.
True.
And he continued to pursue music through higher education at Alma College in Michigan. During this time here, he won Outstanding Soloist at the Notre Dame Collegiate Jazz Festival, one of the most esteemed jazz festivals around, where he soloed on drums, vibes, and marimba, all within the same 30-minute set. The man just moved to Seattle over 6 months ago and rapidly, albeit quietly, has become one of the busiest guys around. So please welcome from Alma, Michigan, the jazziest, hip-hop-loving, skydiving Michigander I've had the pleasure of knowing, my good friend Cyrus Zerbe.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah, man.
Did your homework, man.
I had some help, but I had a lot of fun doing so. But I guess first things first, your dad was a drummer and you got started at age 5. So what took you so long?
It started at 5 for sure. I mean, it was kind of, it's always been there my entire life. You know, as you were saying, played French horn. So I think like I hit middle school and I kind of wanted to get away from what my dad was doing, kind of create my own path. And at that point in time, being young, thought it was a different instrument. You know, went down that pathway. Still studied drums a little bit, just not as intensively. Played French horn all the way through high school. And then, I don't know, once I hit college, I like knew that French horn wasn't necessarily the right path. And at that point, switched over to drums specifically.
So were you playing drums that whole time, or was it strictly French horn and then pivoted back?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was always playing drums to some extent. We had like a summer percussion camp that happened at Alma College, so where I ended up going to school. So I was always involved in that, always taking private lessons. And then I started playing drum set. I want to say like in the jazz band in sixth grade, if I remember correctly. May have been seventh, but yeah, that's when I really started playing a good amount.
You kind of answered it, but my question was going to be, did you start on drums to kind of emulate your dad? Like when you were younger, was that something you aspired to, or is it, oh, that's just dad's thing? And
yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that for sure. I got my first drum set when I was like 5 or 6 years old. My parents got me one. So, I mean, I was always hitting them a little bit, but never seriously studying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I would say I was doing both kind of at the same time, but as soon as I was old enough, to use an instrument in a band setting, it was always French horn. So I guess they kind of went hand in hand, in all honesty.
Right on. And so was it a really musical family? Like when you were growing up, was everyone kind of involved, or what drove you to participate in like school band and stuff like that?
For sure. Definitely like a musical based family. Mostly my dad. I mean, my dad was, got both his bachelor's and his master's at Central Michigan University. It's another school back in Michigan. I was born shortly after he got his degree, I believe, right around that timeline. And then he started teaching high school and middle school up in Alma. So I grew up my entire life in Alma, went to college in Alma. So I kind of had him as a teacher my entire life.
Was he ever pushing you to pick drums up again because he had a background? Because he was a drummer, correct?
Yeah, correct. I think it was actually the opposite. I think he like wanted to let me make my own decision.
Very cool.
He wanted me to be involved with music to some extent. But I think he wanted me to create my own path, which I appreciate. Part of me like wishes maybe he pushed me towards drums a little bit, but I think he was being pretty fair-handed, and it just turned out that eventually was what I wanted to do. Yeah.
When you pivoted from playing the kit casually and then, you know, studying music with like French horn and whatnot, how did your approach to drumming change once you decided to pursue it and like get an education?
You know, that's interesting. I would say, you know, as soon as I started playing drums in any serious fashion, which I actually would date back to when I like got into jazz band, which would have been around, again, I think it was like sixth or seventh grade is when that would have started. I found myself being pretty competitive about it. I kind of wanted to hog the best parts. I wanted to get all the parts. I wanted to, you know, just be like top dog, honestly. So I was always kind of striving to be that. And that honestly, like, kind of always followed me definitely through high school. I was always super competitive, you know, would go to different jazz festivals and was always aiming to win those awards. And, I mean, I think that was a huge impact on kind of where my path led me, and why I like went so headfirst into drum set in particular. And then I hit college and then like definitely, there's still some competitive nature to it. My freshman, sophomore year, I did the typical thing and kind of got into the party culture and didn't necessarily apply myself as much as I should have. And so I kind of started taking a back seat, and then my junior year really went headfirst again and got back into that kind of, there was a little more camaraderie, in that ensemble and within that percussion studio, just cause we were all kind of working together. But there was definitely still a competitive drive in me to be, I don't know, elite, I guess, with the drum set in particular. That was always my focus, always has been. So
yeah, I know you're really into hip hop now. Were you into it in high school as well, like junior high, high school?
Not so much. No, that was something that kind of came about in college. Okay. I really didn't listen to a lot of, you know, like rap other than like going to school dances and hearing Usher, like Lil Jon, but
just being that it's such a competitive genre, especially lyrically, I was wondering if that had played into it. Do you think that's maybe why you were gravitated towards in college, or was it just that it was a new scene and got introduced to it because you were in college?
Yeah, I think it was kind of the people I was surrounding myself with. You know, I kind of mentioned getting into the party culture a little bit, and I think that those both like hip-hop, R&B music kind of correlates with partying to some extent. Not that it has to, but I think that this is kind of a direct line. And so I was starting to, you know, go to some college parties and things of that nature, and that's when I discovered Mac Miller. And that was honestly probably my like biggest introduction to hip-hop was Mac, and obviously an unfortunate loss, but
yeah, R.I.P.
Yeah, but he like, him in particular going to those parties, it's like anytime I hear the Mixtape Kids, like I immediately am like drawn back to those memories of that particular college house where I would always go, those people that I was always partying with. It's like pretty vivid, and then from there, like started to explore a little bit more of that genre. Got pretty heavily into like Drake, a little bit into Wiz Khalifa, and then like started to mature a little bit more, I think, over the years, and started to get into more old school hip hop. Really started to appreciate Jay Dilla, which is a producer from Detroit back in the home state. And that's when I really started to delve into hip hop drumming, in particular with Jay Dilla, for sure.
Cool. And so I guess rewinding a little bit, what were you listening to, I guess, before college then, and how did that, or did it influence your decision to then pursue music education, or were those completely separate entities? Like, you enjoyed music, but then...
Yeah, no, I think they were correlated. I think music education in particular was, it was kind of a fallback. It was me viewing my future and my career, like how I could make a living. And I don't know, like I would say my junior year is when I decided that was like not a good way of going. It was not the correct reason to be teaching. Mm-hmm. And I still love teaching private lessons. I'm really great one-on-one, but getting into a big classroom is, I mean, I don't know. It's difficult for me, at least.
That's a whole different beast, though, too. Yeah. Like, one person, you can find that common ground and really interact. And then if you've got to get however many people to settle in and work,
right,
everyone learns differently. And
right,
I don't envy folks that teach any topic at any level to multiple people at a time.
Absolutely. It takes a huge amount of patience. And I, like, give props to all my friends that are doing it. Because, I've got a whole group of people I know that are in the education realm. And it just takes a specific demeanor and a specific person, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So going back to, just to answer your question, like with what I was listening to in high school, middle school, it was more like jazz based. So I was listening to a lot of like Dave Brubeck Quartet, you know, a lot of Charlie Parker, things of that nature. Love the Buddy Rich bands were always amazing. Got into like Led Zeppelin. That was like a huge influence for my parents. You know, and then from there kind of delved my own way. I got into Incubus. That was one of my big groups back in high school. And, you know, I definitely like kept me driven. It was a lot of the stuff I was practicing in high school. So, it definitely influenced why I went to school for music. For sure. I think those are definitely correlated.
Cool. In, you mentioned Led Zeppelin being like one of your parents' influences and whatnot. Did they introduce you to jazz, or did you get into that jazz through jazz band in school?
Yeah, I would say it was a little bit of both. My dad was definitely hugely influential on that. I grew up listening to, in particular, a lot of Dave Brubeck Quartet and a lot of Buddy Rich, as I mentioned. I know that those were huge influences for my father as well. Joe Morello, the drummer for the Dave Brubeck Quartet, is someone that my dad has always looked up to, someone he's studied with. Even his professor at CMU, Robert Honer, studied with him as well. So there's kind of a chain leading back to that genre and that style of drumming.
Were you playing with other bands? Like, you're playing with like, the school bands. Were you playing in, like, rock bands or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I was really playing with was probably my senior year and my super senior year, but we don't talk about that. but I was playing with this group called Big Sherb, super talented group of guys. And yeah, so we were playing around like at Founders Brewing in Grand Rapids, one of the cooler venues I played at. Meyer Gardens in Grand Rapids, one of the cooler venues I played at. And I was just doing auxiliary percussion with them at that point. But that was like a really cool introduction to live performing with, you know, a band like that. It's super cool.
Nice. And were you, was your dad pretty stoked to see you focusing on drums and like really getting out in the community as well as your pursuing it in education?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely proud. I think he would have been regardless of what I've done.
Right.
You know, I definitely think he's excited about what I'm doing right now. And, you know, he's always been super supportive of me. So I assume for him it was a no-brainer, but you can definitely tell he's excited about the whole thing.
That's awesome, man. I guess as you transitioned from high school and then to college, you have to go through an audition process. Then when you're going into like music school, was there a process at your school?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's like an initial audition. Any of the groups, so if you're like for the marching band, for example, which is one of the first groups you kind of enter into, you know, coming out of summer, you have those summer rehearsals. So that was immediately immersed into the Elmer College Kilty Band in particular. So there's an initial audition just to kind of place you within the percussion, the drum line or the pit percussion, see where you kind of fit best. So yeah, right off the bat, definitely in the auditions for all that stuff.
Nice. And was there for the school, like if you wanted to study music, did you have to audition for the music school, or was that just like taking the prerequisites? And
yeah, there was definitely, an initial audition as well. Just walking in and yeah, for sure.
Right on. And for folks that are interested, maybe someone who's in high school or transferring, what did that look like? And I guess, what would your advice be to someone preparing to go to a 4-year or something like that, where they're going to be doing music and having to audition?
Yeah. I mean, definitely you gotta be practiced and ready. Depending on your school, like I can say for Elma that there was a lot of, different levels of, you know, talent and experience leading into even just the percussion studio. You had a pretty big array of experience levels. And so, you know, with that school in particular, with my dad being the head of percussion there, it's really nice going to a small school in particular because the program's kind of tailored to you a little bit more. You don't have to fit a mold. The college kind of suits what you need, make sure you grow properly in your path, which is super cool. You know, I can't speak to a bigger university. I don't know exactly how that goes. Probably depends school basis. But I think like the big thing is making sure that you are prepared to the best of your abilities so that when you enter, your professors are able to kind of accommodate you the way they need to and put you in the direction they need to.
Yeah. And for percussion in particular, how important was like sight reading, or is that, cause I know the notation's different. I don't understand it, but how important was that for your personal experience?
Yeah. I mean, definitely huge. It's hugely beneficial to be able to do that. And that's like just, gaining those skills just comes from experience and, you know, not even practice, just like, yeah, road experience, just over and over and over, Yeah, I mean, but it's pivotal because, like, even walking into a big band setting, there are times when you might have to sight read a chart. You know, maybe another player gets sick or is injured or who knows, and you got to sit in on the spot, being able to read those charts and make sure you're hitting the hits with the rest of the band where they need to be and playing the feels you need to feel. Yeah, it's super, super important.
Yeah, and I think I'm speaking through a former roommate of mine, but sound like he had a really, at the University of Oregon, the marching band, like, trials sounds very similar. I'm assuming you went over the summer a couple weeks early. Was that kind of your experience as well?
Yeah, so they were pretty early in the summer. Mm-hmm. Just because the percussionists would, like, the drumline and, again, the pit percussion would have monthly rehearsals. So, yeah, it was pretty immediate getting integrated into that and having that tryout experience and then going from there, making sure we had a strong percussion section.
Yeah, I want to say we started school in, we were on the quarter system, so we started late September, but I want to say that marching band tryouts were like end of July, early August or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah, it was crazy because the first week all around campus, all the different sections were, they would do it outside, which was cool.
Yeah.
But I remember being very intense and it sounded similar. People were placed into different tiers kind of
definitely,
thing.
Definitely.
But yeah, so it sounds like that at least mirrors the experience that I was familiar with. But yeah, and so you go through school and whatnot, and what inspired you to make the transition then from Michigan then to Seattle? Because that seems like a pretty big jump, and obviously you've got like New York, Nashville, Los Angeles as kind of some of the other bigger cities. Do you mind walking me through that?
No,
like,
man.
What that was like?
Not. Yeah, I mean, I had been looking to move to a big city for about a year previous to moving to Seattle, maybe a little bit more than that. I knew that for me personally, that was the route I needed to go to pursue my music career. I was kind of, honestly, it was a God thing. Like, regardless of your religious affiliation, I can't explain it any other way. There were just way too many arrows pointing to Seattle. And so it was a very clear decision. And it just made sense. Like, the scene here is kind of up and coming, one, but it's also established. Like, if you're here, you see the talent that's here, but it's also not a flooded market like Nashville, Austin, and not to like downplay what's going on there. Obviously there's numerous talented musicians there, but it's hard to get your voice heard, when you have just a sea of different voices and musicians. So it made all the sense in the world to me to come here and kind of pave my own path or start my own wave, I suppose. And, yeah, I certainly feel that it was the right decision.
That's awesome, man. And how did you prep for that move? Cause I, for example, saw you in this, if you're down, dive into some of the nitty or gritty stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I found you on Instagram just because the way you were positioning yourself before you even moved here. But I was like, oh, he's a Seattle drummer, you know, like, and I hit you up that way. But for that to happen, there obviously has to be a conscious effort on the branding side of things for like some random person that had never come into contact with you.
For sure.
So do you mind walking me through kind of your mentality and how you approached that from like a self-branding perspective?
Totally not, man. We might give away a few secrets, but that's okay. So I, you know, like, I moved to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and that was about, I want to say about 2 years after I graduated, a year and a half. And that's when I like initially kind of figured out how to market myself. So at that point I like got my first set of business cards, something that when I was at the right, time and place, I could hand that to someone so that they could contact me. So, you know, they could hire me essentially to play drums. And so I was going to a blues jam, at a bar there called Shakespeare's. And I was able to just, you know, I had those cards, went up on stage, it was a free jam. We played, and people asked me for my information. I had that business card readily available. And the first night I went and did that, I immediately saw that that was a good path to success and a good way of marketing myself. So I kind of like took that experience, figured out that I was moving to Seattle. At that point, kind of redirected my focus into my social media, because obviously I can't market myself face to face in Seattle when I'm living in Michigan. So, you know, it was very clear that I needed to turn to social media, at least for me, to market myself in a different area. So I had been just dabbling in Instagram starting that January. And then I would say about March, April. I guess it was closer to May or June is when I started flipping a lot of those videos and like geotagging them in Seattle and putting a lot of like Seattle music scene hashtags on my posts and things of that nature. And it worked. I mean, I got a lot of traffic in Seattle. I mean, you contacted me, I had a couple other people contact me, people from Seattle. You know, you can kind of go into your insights and see who's paying attention to your posts, and my percentages swung towards Seattle, which it was perfect. I mean, obviously that's a pretty direct piece of evidence that it was working. So kept doing that and just kept posting and kept tagging in Seattle. Took a trip out to Seattle, went to a couple gyms during that week trip, did some face-to-face, met some more people, just really tried to plant myself. And then obviously came to your first gig. Well, not your first gig, but came to one of your gigs. That's where we officially met after we had been kind of chatting on Instagram. So that was definitely, social media was a huge, huge piece of it. And then just learning how to market myself with a face-to-face contact and a business card. It's huge.
Yeah. And you did it really well too. One of the things that I'd noticed is not only were you tagging Seattle scene and there's some blurry photo, like it was very well curated content, if you will. You know, like that, I did see you were at some jam, but it was like very intentional, like you're very well framed in it and stuff like that. And the other, you'd been posting some drum covers at that point. So what I thought was great is not only did I see one video and go, oh, I want to get a hold of this guy, like I wanted to go through your digital resume, if you will, and went back, and you had some awesome covers and really high res videos, and it was like, oh, this guy's serious. You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's great to hear, man. Cause that was definitely a part of the whole reason I started an Instagram profile, was to have kind of a database of material so that, again, when I had that business card and I could hand it to somebody, has my Instagram tag right there, they can go to my page, they see my stuff, and regardless of what I'm trying to get from them or work on them with, or work with them on rather, you know, they could look at my plane. And along with that, definitely with the framing and sort of what you're talking about, it was a huge learning curve and still is into, you know, using cameras. I just, like, since I moved to Seattle, got into multiple camera angles using like iMovie, Final Cut Pro, you know, doing those sorts of things. Now I'm miking my drums and plugging all that into a DAW and doing like EQing. And there's just so much more that goes into it. But the advancement in what I've been able to do because I started that adventure has been like huge, absolutely huge.
Yeah. And what resources are you using to learn all that stuff? Is it just trial by fire, or you turn into YouTube, or do you have a spot you go to in particular?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a lot of trial, like you're saying. And it's also just watching other Instagrammers, just paying attention what kind of the market is deeming to be the correct path to an extent. I mean, obviously I want my material to be unique, but there's obviously some sort of formula to success. So just looking at other successful drummers on Instagram or whatever your market may be, but yeah.
And the drum cover you did, was it Golden Gardens that you shot at?
Oh yeah.
The beach front?
Yeah.
That one's my favorite for sure. But that was kind of like what you're talking about. And didn't you say it was only like 15 minutes or something that you had to shoot it?
I mean, it was pretty quick. I would say honestly, that's pretty fair.
Cause it was set up.
Yeah.
And then to actually play was...
Yeah, my friend Brian, who's, you know, Brian James, lead singer, Brian James, the Great Unknown, he helped me with that, and he had got some really sick drone footage on that. Super happy with it, and we're working on some more videos down the line, so watch out for that. But, yeah, that was just such a cool experience. But we essentially, like, parked our cars, and the distance from the park, the parking area to the beachfront was probably... I don't know, probably 500 to 600 meters, I would guess. And so, you know, hauling a whole drum set with no cart back and forth, I'm essentially sweaty by the time we're filming the actual shot. And so, yeah, we get it all set up. And like you were saying, those 15 minutes, we were trying to hit the perfect time when the sunset was hitting the back of those mountains and kind of reflecting. It ended up being a perfect shot. It was absolutely beautiful. And I got to, again, give credit to Brian for that idea. He had a very, very beautiful concept in his head. yeah, that was a super cool experience, and I was like definitely happy with the product, so going more for that in the future.
Yeah, it was just super creative too. I hadn't even, so like you said, there's a formula of what works, and it's, you know, hitting, from what I've seen, it's like covering the right songs that are kind of on the upswing, et cetera, yeah, et cetera. But you're really different. I saw that video, and that wasn't like anything I had seen, you know?
Yeah.
So, because was it Anderson .Paak or J. Cole?
That was J. Cole. Yeah, that was Middle Child. So,
and it was like right as that song was starting to pop,
yeah,
too.
And so I covered it previously, too. You know, that was before I was miking my drums. That was prior to, that was like when I was just starting to get into two drum angles. So I had like an overhead, and then I did like a front facing camera for that cover. And then, you know, Brian and I were discussing doing something a little bit bigger. And so I just thought that was a perfect opportunity to kind of recreate that. Cause that song was still on the top of the charts for like, I don't know, I was probably sitting there for a month, close to 2 months.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And it's still got, it's gotta be top 200 for sure. Still,
oh, still
at
yeah,
the moment that, yeah.
Yeah, it was a great
smash
one.
It. Yeah.
Totally.
So you make the move out from Michigan, and what was the biggest learning lesson about the Seattle scene, like once you got here? And then what could the Seattle scene learn from the Michigan scene?
It's a tough question. I mean, right off the bat, coming into Seattle, I really feel like I kind of touched on it earlier. Like I took some of the things that I learned Michigan, particularly in my time in Kalamazoo, applied them here. So I started going immediately to jam sessions and just getting my plane out in front of people, and then immediately being able to hand them a business card so that they could, you know, pair up with me and we could do something. And it was extremely beneficial, and I saw immediate results. I mean, I've been out here like 7 months now, 8 months now, and obviously playing with multiple groups and doing multiple different things, multiple facets, which is just like amazing. It's like really cool seeing that output from the input. Patience is definitely the big thing, like in any market, but what I experienced in Seattle was just having a little bit of patience. Cause I think December, January were the 2 months where I was really investing in just getting my name out there. Then February and March was more like actually getting together with some different artists for the first time. And then April, May, practicing a bunch and getting ready, and then end of May into June is when I started getting my first gigs, you know, and actually getting out on the scene and playing. And now there's still like more development from that, because now more people are seeing me play, seeing our groups play. It's kind of just starting to hit the middle of the hill, I guess. So I'm excited to see what happens from there. But I think the biggest thing that going to any big city or any sort of area where you're trying to be successful in music is just that patience factor, and just being like true to yourself as a musician, just putting what you have out there and letting people that vibe with it come to you, as opposed to like forcing anything.
100%. And one thing I really respect about what you do, and that's really impressive, is you truly treat it like a startup, like investing yeah, in yourself. But then from the get-go, like you said, having those business cards and getting out there, because some people, I shouldn't say some people, I think that there's just a general sentiment, especially within artistic communities, that I'm going to let the art speak for itself and it's just going to work out. But with so much stuff coming out all the time, like you really just took the initiative and were patient. Some people would go, I've gone to these jams and no one's hit me up. But like following through, like you said, it's, you were active the entire time you were here. And the gig lands, what, June 1st, May?
Yeah, I think late gig. May was my first gig, pretty
but,
sure.
But that's like, you were working that those whole 5 months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always just thought that was really cool. Just very professional, and clearly there's results, you know, yeah, and it's just a lot of time and effort. But one thing that I think a lot of folks could learn from you is just taking that approach of looking bigger picture and just investing. And
a lot of investing. You got it. It's yeah, a lot of investing. And just like, I mean, you see those results and it might not be an immediate monetary benefit, but that's not the goal. Like if you're in it to play music, the immediate money is not the goal. It's about the art, and then let the things after that kind of trickle in as a like a good consequence.
And building that foundation is going to be the key to any sort of longevity as
oh, yeah,
well.
Oh yeah.
And I know you're a big fan of his, and that's like the story of Anderson .Paak is like
yeah,
just
yeah, dude was homeless
and building and yeah, building. Yeah. I mean, peaking at 31.
Yeah, I think he's 31, 32. Yeah.
Yeah. But
killing it.
Which is awesome. But again, it's that approach of just like from the ground up. He didn't get radio till what, 10 years into his career kind of thing. Yeah. It's like pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But sweet. And so with that, you play a bunch of different styles too. So was that a conscious effort when you were getting involved with different projects of, I want to try all these different things, or that just kind of happen as you were going?
Yeah. I mean, I think it happened pretty naturally. Like going back to middle school, like jazz was my bass. And I think for any young striving musician, I would certainly point them in the direction of studying jazz, because you can take those experiences and spread them just about anywhere to any genre. Like, it's just getting that independence and the skills that you obtain from studying jazz just applies so well to everything. Hip hop, rock and roll, country music, you know, R&B, the whole deal. So I think that's kind of the root of it for sure. And then as I, you know, followed my music career, up to this point, it just kind of branched out. So I, like, in seventh grade was in a garage rock band with my friend Talon Weatherby. Check him out, dude. He's still doing things in Michigan. Phenomenal artist. And then, you know, in college, it was a little more focused, but we did, you know, it was a percussion ensemble. I was playing in the marching band. I was playing in the concert band. I was playing in the orchestra, you know. And so I was like, kind of, my talents were spread into a lot of different areas there. And then, you know, hitting Seattle, I think I just already had that base of being able to kind of play in different facets. So it's just kind of worked out that way. And I think it's extremely smart and important for any musician to be able to be flexible and be able to do more than one thing, because it makes yourself way more marketable.
Totally. And was there any artist or musician you were trying to emulate? Like when you were growing up, was there a person like, that's the kind of career I want? Or was it just, this is what I want to do and I'm going to be the best I can be at this thing?
Yeah. I mean, from a playing standpoint, it was definitely like Buddy Rich, and my dad. I mean, my dad was just huge. I mean, following his footsteps is a big enough battle in and of itself. The guy is incredible musician. And so just studying those guys and trying to reach that level of musicianship, I feel like the rest is kind of followed, with that. I haven't necessarily, I mean, I've like definitely focused in on my marketing strategies and how to market myself. But I think those things kind of came after the educational piece and being able to play a certain way.
For sure. And now that you've graduated, how do you refine your talents? Like, do you have like a specific practice regimen, or is it the different acts you're playing with is the practice?
Yeah. I mean,
cause you got a lot going on. So I guess it's a time management question.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge and a very difficult balance. And like my move here is, it's been a constant learning experience, cause I got here and immediately like went headfirst and going to jam sessions and marketing myself. And that takes up a lot of time, especially working a full-time job along with it. So, you know, I feel like that's kind of shifted, constantly. And I'm now just getting to a point where I'm like being able to practice, you know, 3 times a week on my own, plus my rehearsals. Cause I mean, I'm rehearsing with you, I'm rehearsing with Monitor, I'm rehearsing with Brian, I'm rehearsing with Space Owl, and those guys are playing. And so like that Nimbus, I mean, I just think constantly playing is great practice. That's phenomenal practice, but it's not a good opportunity to learn new things necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's a great resource to apply new things. So you still like have to have that balance. And so like, as I said, like I'm now just reaching a point where I'm kind of able to, practice by myself the way I'd like to. So yeah, I think I answered your question.
Yeah, for sure. Cause in with that move, I guess, what did you learn and what advice would you give a musician going to a new city? Because there's a lot that we could, like a lot of what you talked about, marketing and branding, that can be universally applied. But specifically, what did you learn, you know, picking up and moving across the country? And I guess, what would you say to someone looking to do the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was trial and error, but I, you know, as I've stated, kind of just went head deep. Or head first right into going to jam sessions and just putting my product out there and seeing what happens. And I think that's like huge, regardless of how confident you are in your material, just put it out there and see what happens. You're going to gain confidence just from that. and then go home and practice. If you're not getting the kind of results you want, if you're not getting people hitting you up to play, it just means you got to go back and work a little bit harder in the practice room, and then go right back to a jam session, put it back out there till something sticks. I think that's, I mean, in my opinion, that's definitely the method.
For sure. And as you mentioned, I think you got five acts total that you've played with since coming out here.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Yeah.
So, I know you were talking about going to jam sessions and whatnot. How did you pick which projects to hone in on? And then how do you, like, literally, how do you manage it as far as time commitments? Yeah. Like, I know I live by my calendar.
Yeah, well, same.
Yeah.
Yeah, my iPhone's my best friend. Calendars is my best friend. When I was in Michigan, I was doing a little bit of manual calendar and a little bit of my iPhone calendar. And I got out here and it just was like not an option anymore. Things were happening way too quickly. I had to have my calendar in my pocket at all times. So went strictly to my iCalendar for sure. Yeah, I mean, as far as picking my investments time-wise, I feel like that kind of sorts itself. It just became like very evident with Brian in particular, I would say, just with like his business plans already being in line and him coming to me with a very strategic plan. You know, it was a no-brainer to put my time investments into that. And I don't feel like it's been a strain because of that, like because things are kind of put in place.
Yeah.
For me, to an extent, I can come in as an artist and kind of just do my thing and see success from that. And then, you know, there's groups like Monitor, and it's a similar deal where, you know, they have things in line and I can come in and do my thing. I feel like I've got a little bit more, not to take away from Brian, because I think I've got a good amount of input there too as far as what we're doing marketing too, but I think with Monitor, I have even more input, I guess, just because it's got different goals. Like Monitor as a band has different goals than Brian has. I'm playing with you, different goals there than what Monitor has, what Brian has. It's just all a little bit different. But as I was saying, like it just kind of is fitting together. So like with Monitor, we're now working on recording an album in November, December. So now that information is in my mind, I got to tweak exactly, you know, where I'm spending my time and how I'm spending my time. It's a week to week fluctuation, honestly. Totally. And then with you, you know, we had that gig a couple weeks ago. And as that gig approached, my time investments switched over pretty much exclusively to you.
Yeah.
At that point in time. Just because it was such a fun. You got it, man. You got it. It's a killer show.
Yeah, man, it was fun.
It's definitely just a constant shifting, and I'm still learning. I'm honestly still learning, trying to refine that.
It's a funny business to try and manage schedules into, because it's not the typical 9-to-5 of this is the job that I do and I will go do it. It's like you even said, there's different phases to where, you know, like you're wrapping up the record with Brian James,
yeah,
and then Monitor's got an album coming. So there's literally different cycles to, of there's like the album, then tour cycles, then pro, like
100%
scheming and all that swirling around can get pretty crazy.
Yeah.
For one, I'm like struggling with, I shouldn't say struggling, but at capacity with one.
Yeah, dude. So. It's a lot to dance. So we got deifying your own personal project. So yeah. Really, you're thinking about more than one thing for sure.
Yeah. But then you've got like that on, you know, to a degree in five different groups. So yeah. I'm just like, man.
Luckily, I'm a drummer. So I can,
yeah,
sit
but
back
it's still impressive, man.
Yeah.
But so I actually have a special segment here for you. Ooh. It's pretty short. It's called Emma Asks. And so
I got
a question here for you, which is, how do you manage to fit two drum kits into your room and still leave space for her?
So this, so we're like talking apartments now. Okay, currently, oh man, put me on the hot seat. Right now, currently what I'm toying with, devoid of this influence that's coming from you and Emma. I'm currently kind of toying with my drum sets now in my apartment. It was in a house prior to this, and so I had a lot more space. The opportunity has kind of like shifted. So now it's in my room. And so what I'm doing right now is kind of toying with integrating my electronic drum set and my acoustic drum set.
Ooh, nice.
So I just got home and I set up my acoustic drum set the way I want it for live gigs. And I'm like super happy with it. It's a new setup. I've added some new things, like got a stacker. So it's like got a nice like trashy hip hop sound. I'm integrating a couple electronic pads, a second snare drum, doing some crazy stuff. And then essentially what I'm, and this is still in the works, so I don't have a final answer for you, but what I'm trying to do right now is integrate that electronic kit for practicing, where I can just like, for example, if I have my snare drum in front of me at a live gig, essentially what I'm doing in my apartment is taking that snare drum away and putting an electronic pad in its place. But I still have my toms and my bass drum there, but it just brings the volume down. Mm-hmm. So as far as space, you know, definitely helpful in that way. Yeah. So I only have one drum set.
Right.
So Emma, if you're listening, I got ideas. Got ideas.
So it's kind of interesting that you brought up, in what's becoming more commonplace now in music is that hybrid model of electronic and acoustic. And so what programs are you using for practice? Does it just have a brain, or do you actually like run it through your laptop to?
Yeah. I mean, rehearse? I can do both. In the past I've done, I've used like DAWs. So I hook it in all through my laptop, use a USB from the drum brain, as you were talking about, into my laptop, and then run sounds out of that. But I'm really, at this point, my headset or my mindset is going to be using that brain exclusively and using internal sounds from that brain and uploading sounds onto the brain so that I don't need an extra piece of equipment. It seems a lot more manageable.
Totally.
Yeah. So I'm going to be using a lot of sounds that are, one, already on the drum brain, and then two, that I'm uploading onto the drum brain and then using in a live setting.
What kind of electric kit or electric stuff do you have?
Yeah, I mean, so I bought an Alesis DM10X, to get super technical with you. It was definitely a budget line purchase, but for the money, I'm extremely happy with it, because like, you can get a Roland kit, as I see you have in the corner here.
That thing's like 18 years old.
Yeah, and it probably is still worth multiple thousands of dollars, honestly.
Ooh, well, I might not have it for long then.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me know what you end up doing. But, you know, those kind of kits usually run at least $3,000. And for something comparable to what I have, you're talking closer to $6,000, $7,000. And the quality is definitely a little bit higher. There's no doubt about it. Roland's like the, you know, the lead name in electronic drums. And Alesis at that point in time was just kind of starting to put its toes in the water. So I feel like I hit the wave at a good point in time where I got a very inexpensive product that had a lot of, a lot of potential, a lot of uses. So I'm super happy with that product, and I can kind of, you know, it has its own, frame, so I can put all the electronic drums up with it. And what I'm starting to do now is kind of get away from that and just integrate individual pads into my acoustic drum setup.
And when you say that, is it literally on the drum skin itself, or when you're saying those pads are?
Yeah, so it's like an individual physical pad. So it's like, it's like hard to explain. But yeah, it's like it's an electronic pad, and then it's got a mesh head on it. And so, am I answering your question?
Yeah, no, I was just curious when you said integrating, if like you had an acoustic tom and that pad was going on top of the acoustic tom.
Gotcha. So I would have a separate stand for that electronic pad. So I like bought the other day, I like went to a drum shop and picked up a bunch of snare drum stands. And so I'm just using those snare drum stands for each individual pad.
Gotcha.
And
okay.
Connecting those all to the brain. Yeah.
Very cool. And what's that upload process look like? Do you have to sample your own sounds then? Or can you go on, like, in theory, could you go on Splice, get a bunch of drum sounds, and then upload them to that head?
So, yeah, ideally that'll be the process. I still have to mess with uploading sounds to that brain. I've never done it. So that's kind of a work in progress. But that is ideally what I'm going to be trying to do. Yeah, like, do either, like, find good samples and purchase said samples, or find good free samples online, and then upload them onto the brain. But I mean, if that's not possible, then I'll just use what's on the brain. There are definitely plenty of good sounds on that DM10 brain.
We were demoing the other day, and I totally forgot it. In I can't imagine what Roland's do now, 20 years later, man. With the amount of sounds. But even the sounds on there that you can get, I was super impressed by the versatility. Yeah. So
it's come a long way, and it's still continuing to just accelerate and get crazier.
Yeah, it's super cool stuff.
Yeah.
So we've kind of talked a lot about what's going on currently. You've been in the studio with Brian James. You mentioned you've performed a bunch with him and Monitor. Monitor's gearing up for an album. So what should folks be on the lookout for the remainder of the year with what you got going on?
Yeah. I mean, we've got Brian James and the Great Unknown. The album's dropping August 31st. So we're coming up on that real quick.
Oh, right on. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm super excited to get that out there.
Nice. And,
I mean, it's going to be a very solid album. And we're pretty hopeful and confident that it's really going to take off. So that'll be coming out August 31st. And then, you know, as I stated right now, Monitor, that group's really like we're putting some new music together for a new album. Check out their last album, Memoran, phenomenal album. And we're working with the same producer in the studio for that album as well. So, I mean, it's going to sound fantastic, I have no doubt. So just in the writing process with them, that'll be recorded by the end of the year, and definitely don't have a drop date on that one yet, but it's in the works.
Better to go into writing without the album release deadline.
Definitely. So the focus with the album dropping with Brian too, obviously, like, we'll be shifting into a playing position now that we're out of the studio. So you'll be seeing a lot more of us playing. Here's a little leaker spoiler, but do plan on a 2020 tour happening with Brian James.
Right on.
And then just starting to play with him now that the album's complete and we can put a product out there, and then continue to play with you as well.
That's exciting, man. It's super cool to see what you've done. I mean, and this is no knock against anybody in the Seattle scene, but you've come in and gone leaps and bounds ahead of some of your peers just through like work ethic, and it's super cool to see. Before I let you go, I do have actually a get stumped section for you. Not to be confused with the Emma's Ask section.
Yeah, same but, thing.
Buddy Rich or Dave Weckl?
Buddy Rich. Easy.
Tony Royster Jr. or Chris Dave?
I'm gonna go currently Chris Dave, because that's more of my study style right now.
Right on. Tom Misch or Anderson .Paak?
Man, Tom Misch for sure. But that's a hard one, man. That's hard.
And then if you were to solo, would you go with marimba or vibraphone?
Vibraphone, beautiful instrument.
And then Oxnard or Ventura?
Ventura. But props to Oxnard.
Yeah.
Gets downplayed way too much. Yeah. Still a great album.
Including by me.
Yeah. Right. Fair enough.
Yeah. But before I let you go, the big three at the end here, what do you feel like sets like your music and your personal style apart, as well as the music like that you're doing with like Brian James and Monitor?
I'm going to have you ask that question one more time.
Yeah. What sets like your music apart? And that can be your personal style or the work that you're doing with like Brian James and Monitor.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an ability to listen to a melody and play drums according to that melody. So if I'm soloing, I'm literally hearing the melody of the song in my head and playing over top of that. I think that's, it's something that every drummer should try and incorporate into their playing, but I think it's difficult to do, and I think it's something that I do fairly well. And I think just being flexible and moldable to the situation, I think that's something I definitely excel at. So, yeah.
Totally. And so why do you make music?
I mean, it's like my first love, man. I don't know what else I would do. I literally don't know what else I would do, like, professionally and be happy. So it's just a clear path for me.
That's a great answer. You're actually the first person to say that. Wow. Believe it or not. Like, 30-something odd episodes in, no one has just said because I love it.
Yeah. So, that's 100% what it is. Yeah. No doubt.
And so what do you hope others get out of your music?
I mean, emotion. I think any sort of good music that I listen to, particularly why I love Tom Misch so much, is it makes me feel something. And so if I can you know, with whatever groups I'm playing with or just my personal playing can make someone feel something, that's a win in my book.
Right on. Well, before we sign off here, where can people find you? Social media, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Instagram's definitely a big one. Transition to YouTube pretty heavily. That's going to be the next venture. So definitely YouTube tags the same. It's just my name, Cyrus Zerbe. I mean, pretty universal. Nobody has that name. So,
dude, that's awesome.
Yeah.
When I, this is a total sidebar. When I was doing DB Stewart, I was shocked to find that was like taken across like a lot of formats.
That's pretty crazy.
And there's an author apparently.
Huh.
So I gotta screw up his SEO now.
Yeah.
But
you can do it.
But dude, thank you so much for coming on through.
Yeah, man.
It was
for
awesome. Yeah, it was awesome to get to sit down with you. Excited to see what you do in the next 6 months. It's been a crazy 6 months already. So totally. To see what the next six will be now that you've got the foundation set on many fronts, it's super cool to see.
I'm excited for it, man. Appreciate it.
For sure. Cheers.
Yeah, man. Now to look at the candle when it bursts, cause it's wrong how to wear feed us without a placenta. I wanna play the guitar, but I can't find a pick. There's something missing, but I don't know why. Resort to whimpering and to keeling over. But if you knew all of the weight I've been heaving for thee, you wouldn't be giving me that cold, 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 cold shoulder. That cold, cold, cold shoulder. That cold, cold, cold shoulder.
That was Cold Shoulder by Monitor off their last album, Memorand. They are getting back in the studio, so be sure to follow them on their socials and all that good stuff. Also, be sure to check out Brian James. Their album is dropping in just a few weeks here. I'll have all the links up for that. Thank you again so much to Cyrus for coming on through. Truly a pleasure to get a chance to sit down with him and talk to his career. Super inspiring guy. Make sure you follow him on all the socials. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. And I will see you next time.